call this meeting to order. Please turn off or mute your electronic devices. And Ms. Whitmore, would you please do the roll call?
Dr. Bernard?
Here.
Ms. Crager? Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James?
Here.
Mr. Logie?
Here.
Ms. Solomon? Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Sorry.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Dr. Wright?
Walking in.
You got horrible.
He's right here.
He's literally walking in.
Yes.
Here.
All right, so we're going to start off with 2025 to 2026. Tracy, you read us the summaries, please.
And the two numbers are the same for each case. Case 2025, the woman has to know what happened, and the son is down the border at the end. And case 2026, the complaint is here in Pasadena, and the respondent is Julie Mayer, DVM. September 1st, 2021, Sadie and 12-year-old female Lebron was presented to Dr. Porter due to allergy, increased nurse, anorexia, and vomiting. The doctor examined, Dr. Porter recommended Lebron, and administered the doctor who had on the dog was discharged. On September 3rd, 2021, Lebron was collected for testing. On September 4th, 2021, Dr. Mayer contacted the pet owner about the blood results. She reports the dog having an infection and possibly cancer. She recommends starting the dog on antibiotics and having an abdominal ultrasound. On September 8th, 2021, the dog had an abdominal ultrasound performed and was diagnosed with a chiomedra. Surgery was performed. That evening, the dog was transferred to an emergency facility for continued care and monitoring of the recipient hyperglycemia. In case 2225, the committee concluded that possible violation of the veterinary practice act had occurred and it was moved to the secondary court fine ARS 3220312 as raised to R11 5011. For failure to communicate to the pet owner on September 7th, 2021, the seriousness of the dog's blood results and not recommending the dog be left back in the court for re-evaluation. The motion was approved for the vote of 41 with Dr. McCormick opposed. And in case 2026, the committee concluded that possible violations of the veterinary practice act had occurred. It was moved and seconded for ARS 3220312 number 11, gross negligence. Failure to identify the dog as an intact female and possibly have a chiomedra. Failure to relay the pet to the pet owner the seriousness of the dog's blood results and not recommending that the dog be brought back in for re-evaluation. And failure to communicate with or associates the seriousness of the dog's condition, ensuring proper follow-up and care of the patient. And thus you would approve the vote of 5-0.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recheck to see if the public could hear that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
We have both respondents. This will be 2225 first. Dr. McWhorter. Please state your name for the record.
John D. McWhorter.
Thank you, sir. You may have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
The previous meeting that it was brought to my attention that I did not stress hard enough of the seriousness of what had been going on. The, I'll set up a background. The, our practice medical director at the time had said that since we are working different days, that if the doctor that requests lab work is not there when the results come in, then the doctor that it is, that is handed the lab work takes over the case. The pad came in on Wednesday. I suggested blood work. It was declining. Then they, I believe it was on Friday, which was the day I was not working, did come in for blood work, blood draw. And then I did not, I was not at work again until Monday. So I did not see any preliminary lab work until the Tuesday that I was back. I was presented with a request for fluids. I called the owners and asked them how Sadie was doing. Was responded that she thought that it was a little bit dehydrated and was requesting fluids. I asked if she knew how to administer subcutaneous fluids at home. The answer was yes. I said, now, and I did say that, you know, we've got a lot going on. And she said, I'm fine. I'm waiting for my appointment for tomorrow for an ultrasound. I'm concerned that we have cancer and I want to go, I want to see what the ultrasound says. On the day that Sadie was presented to me, at that time, we classified a walk-in. That was not an appointment, that the owner would stay curbside, a technician went out, gathered information, and then brought the owner complaint in, the concerns into me with the record and the patient. I reviewed the record. The patient was scheduled, I believe, a couple of hours earlier. Sadie had been adopted from the Valley Humane Society of Casa Grande. She was scheduled for a spay. She did not show up for that surgery. So noted that we were an intact female, we were older. Examination really did not reveal anything significant. So I requested blood work to see if that can point us in a direction to go. Is it metabolic? Is it infectious, etc.? I called the owner, and at that time I talked over that I thought something was going on, but the examination really did not eliminate anything outstanding. And then I requested basic CBC chemistry, thyroid, and valley fever, plus that I had not seen that the dog had ever been checked for heartburn, either tin fevers or Lyme. So I included that on my plan. And all the blood work was turned down. She said, I just want Sadie to feel better. Previous meeting, we discussed at length the drug of choice that I chose, Depo-Medrol. In this situation, was not the best. That I should have chose a short acting steroid at that time. The patient was brought in the day after I had talked to the owner on the phone. Ultrasound was performed, and late in the day, a pyometra surgery was performed.
That's it?
That's the
end. Thank you very much. Let me step back. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead.
Okay. In a ready answer to this one, basically the issue here is we had a job with a 70,000 white cow, and it appears that timely addressing of that issue did not occur. It was almost 5 days when the CDC with the 70,000 white count came back, and the town did not eventually have the IVF surgery. So I think that's the bottom line. As to the initial visit, I think there's some issues regarding the administration of Depo-Medrol, and then also ultimately the son developed diabetes, was probably pretty diabetic, and combination of the infection and the Depo-Medrol went totally keto-acidotic at the time of the surgery. So in looking at that that issue, and when the doctors, two doctors had this limb work, I had some definite concerns about the handling of this case, and I'd like to hear what the other members of the board would say. My initial thoughts is we need to move this to an informal so we can get into it in more detail.
May I ask you a quick question?
Briefly.
It's not related. I'm hearing a lot of echo, and I'm having difficult hearing.
Understood. We have this issue because of the phone. When someone allowed to develop it, it has a tendency to feedback. So we'll see what I can do.
Okay. I'm sorry.
So I had similar concerns with this case. I think the problem I'm having in reviewing it is in 2225, this doctor wasn't back in the office till the day before. So somebody had already gone over blood work with them. Yes, he looked at the blood work the day before, and maybe should have said, get in today, but the ultrasound was scheduled for the next day. So it was like, what? Is that expected to change a whole course of action and be like, no, you need to get in today, when they were already coming in the morning because they'd already talked to another doctor at the practice? Like, it could have gotten a little bit almost confusing for the owner if he comes in and then all of a sudden changes a plan. I think there should have been some stressing of, wow, this is very serious. I'm just now looking at the blood work that you talked about with the doctor. You know, we've got the ultrasound scheduled, but you're within a 24-hour period of that already happening, and I just don't know. I think that's what I'm struggling with here. I guess I definitely agree with the concern around the Depo-Medrol in this case, but this one to me was more around the Depo-Medrol than the actual follow-up, because he wasn't there to get the blood results.
Well, there's some question, and that's one of the reasons I think it would be nice to get into it further regarding that abdominal ultrasound. There's a question of whether it was recommended by Dr. Maynard, or was it recommended by Dr. Werder? When was the appointment made? There's a question regarding the owner going down the road where I heard cancer and I think this is cancer and I want an ultrasound. So I think those things need to be discussed further. If you have a dog with a 70,000 white count, to me that means pyometra, pyelonephritis, or I would be then looking at leukemia after that. And the sooner these dogs have surgery, the better. So I think there's some questions there about that at the ultrasound. Was it actually scheduled the next day on the recommendation of Dr. Mayer? Part of the record reads that Dr. Werder read in Dr. Mayer's record that there was an abdominal ultrasound. And in the meantime, the owner, I think, did that on their own.
I read it as Dr. Mayer recommended the ultrasound.
In the audio, she can't remember whether she did it.
Or the owner did it. But
I can't remember.
If she didn't do it and the owner decided to do it on their own, that happened during the time that Dr. McWhorter was not in the clinic.
Right.
So regardless, when you're talking case 2225, he came back to that already being done, whether being done by Dr. Mayer or Dr. or by the owner, that ultrasound was already scheduled for the next day. He was, that, he wasn't a part of that in my mind, but I guess the question is do we have enough questions specifically on 2225 regarding the timeline, or is it really more on the Depo-Medrol? And do we have questions on the Depo-Medrol that warrant taking it out of the informal? But, and I could probably go with it.
So is there a motion?
Any other comments?
Who's gonna expand? You know, right now we're gonna decide whether we're, I think we're gonna make a motion to go to an informal, but we're gonna hash it out some more. I mean, if it's a single sentence that you think may sway, what are those?
It, to me, it's a simple, just a simple one sentence statement.
Okay, that's your.
Looking at the record entry on 9-4, I saw that there was that was written down by Dr. Barr, recommended abdominal ultrasound. Also involved in there is from my conversation with the owner on the 7th is that she had contacted oncology veterinary specialist in Gilbert to set up an appointment, and they said that they could not see her until a diagnosis was made. So in my mind, that pushed me over to thinking that she was greatly concerned about cancer, and no matter else what we said, cancer was the first thing on her mind.
Thank you. So we have an official motion?
Yeah, we do. I'd like to make a motion to move this to an informal.
Second.
And we have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
That motion passes, and 2225 will move to an informal. Thank you for being here today. Next up is our 2226. There's a summary for that. We do have the respondent here, Dr. Baer. Would you please come forward? Please state your name for the record.
Julie Maher.
And David Stoll, here on as Dr. Maher's attorney.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to respond to the investigative committee's recommendation in this case. The owner presented Sadie to Dr. McWhirter on September 3rd, 2022. I wasn't present that day. Well, I wasn't present for her care. I wasn't involved in the veterinary care and provided by Dr. McWhirter that day. In reviewing the medical records, which are written, I can see that Dr. McWhirter gave Sadie a depo injection and ordered blood work. I was working the next day, Saturday, September 4th, 2022. In addition to seeing patients at Casa Grande Animal Hospital, I was tasked with calling owners to convey completed lab work for my patients as well as for those of 5 other doctors, such as Dr. McWhirter, who was not on duty that day. For the record, I have never seen or examined Sadie. My involvement in this case is limited solely to the 3 to 5 minute phone call on September 4th to convey information about the blood work. With regard to my phone call with the owner on September 4th, I don't feel that any of the information I conveyed was incomplete, inaccurate, or misleading, or in any way violated the Veterinary Practice Act. I therefore respectfully disagree with the investigative committee's recommendation that I was grossly negligent with respect to how I handled the phone call. First of all, I want you to know that I had full access to the chart for the visit from the day before, and I recall reviewing the lab results prior to calling the owner. Second, I fully appreciated the severely elevated white blood cell count with bands and metamyelocytes reported. It stood out because, frankly, I've never seen metamyelocytes reported in an IDEX report before. My immediate concerns were severe infection, such as a pyometra or a cancerous process, as I noted in the medical record. I specifically recall discussing these concerns with the owner during our conversation, and I prescribed antibiotics that were to be given until they could return for another evaluation. I also recommended that Sadie have an abdominal ultrasound. I did write this in my notes. when I spoke with the investigative committee, or the executive committee on February 1st, I was at a retreat up in Williams, Arizona. I didn't have any notes or charts in front of me. I was not in Casa Grande, Arizona. So I also recommended that Sadie have an abdominal ultrasound to try to determine the source of the white blood cell count. By the end of our conversation, the owner appeared to fully understand the gravity of these lab results and the need for immediate follow-up care. I don't feel I was negligent in either identifying the possibility of a life-threatening illness, such as polyuria or cancer, or conveying the seriousness of Sadie's condition to the owner. I didn't return to the practice until the following Wednesday. Since Dr. McWhorter was still awaiting additional lab results that would be coming in during my absence, I anticipated he'd be reviewing all the results and would make appropriate recommendations during that time when he returned to this case. Again, I honestly believe I appropriately conveyed the seriousness of the lab results to the owner, and I don't feel that anything I did in connection with this phone call fell below the standard of care. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you. Step back. You have no complainant, and Dr. Nazzi, you're the lead on this one as well.
Okay. There are a lot of questions, I think, regarding that evaluation of that lab work. I can appreciate having lab work for an exam that you didn't perform, and then having to do the client communication. Sometimes that can be a little bit difficult when you haven't seen the patient. What we did have, as we talked about these, this severely elevated white count, and I think they did discuss that. Somehow the owner heard about the cancer, and I asked some questions about that. As we just heard, Dr. McWhorter said the policy was that whoever reads the lab work now gets the case. I believe I heard that. And now we're waiting for Dr. McWhorter to return to take the case back over, so that's all very confusing. I think there are some major problems in the communication between the doctors. There's also a question of not Dr. Mayer not being, well, she said in the audio that she was assuming the dog was spayed, which is not the case, and it was in the record. And again, faced with a 70,000 white count, I mean, I think that's one of the first things you're going to look at. So, again, the same thing. I just had some concerns, and I think there's a lot of questions there and a lot of things to discuss. And so, anyone else have any thoughts on Dr. Mayer's part of these?
It would be interesting to hear from the complainant, too, on how that phone call went, right? Sure. Like, was pyometra actually mentioned, or was it infection? And that can, I mean, yes, the pyometra is an infection, but that's a very different state.
Dr. Mayer said she didn't mention it because she thought the dog was spayed.
Yeah. So, although she now said pyometra was a different. I heard that correctly. So there is some inconsistencies, yeah. I think, enough to warrant more questions.
Mr. Chairman, there may also be broader questions about the practice that we could learn from the informal as to whether this failure to communicate, who's in the lead, is an isolated problem or a problem throughout the practice.
Mm-hmm. And neither of these doctors are the responsible vet for the practice, correct?
Correct.
So we have a motion?
Yes, we have a motion that we move case 2226 to informal.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor of moving 2226 to the formal, say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. And we'll move that case to an informal. Thank you for being here today. Next up, we have 2220. Tracy, would you read us this summary, please?
Yes, case 2220, a complaint is Molly Schmidt. The respondent is Sarah L. for DDM. On October 14th, 2020, guests, a 16-year-old male and a schnauzer was presented to respond to the girl to evaluate the dog's increased kidney values following the addition of an elk girl by the cardiologist. From the report, the dog was anorexic, weak, was vomiting, and passing around stool. However, revealed that any kidney insult from the elk girl had resolved, although GI bleed was suspected based on the values. The dog was discharged with GI bronchitis. And the letter reported that the dog not improving, therefore, serenity and health aid was started. The run sound was restarted due to the dog continuing to not leak along with the medical result. On October 27, 2020, the dog was presented to respond and for a check. Comedic reported the dog was coughing, lethargic, and off balance. Thoracic breathing grasps were performed and revealed a large anterior medial cyanide. Further revealed an increase in kidney values. Respondent recommended diagnostics to be determined if the mass was treatable for children with a decline. On November 7, 2020, the dog was presented to respond for progressive lethargy, anorexia, and decreased water intake. The dog was dehydrated and lumbar revealed elevated renal and liver values, and the dog as well as progressive anemia. Respondent recommended humane euthanasia. The goal then is to the dog company manually the maximum on the round 4, 2020. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was unanimously seconded that the board dismissed this issue of no violation. And the motion was approved for the 4-2-1 with Dr. Ginsberg of those.
We have no respondent. Mr. Stoll monitoring?
Yes, sir.
And the complainant is here. Would you care to address the board?
Yes, I would, please.
Thank you. Please come forward. Please state your name for the record.
Melanie Schmidt.
Thank you. I'll give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning. My name is Melanie Schmidt, and I would like to address the board regarding case 22-20 involving Dr. Sarah Ford and my dog, Gus. I hope that everyone has been able to carefully and thoroughly review Gus's medical records and the supporting documentation and video that I've provided. I will not describe every detail again, but I would like to reiterate the key points. If you watched the video of Gus from September 27th, you would see that despite his old age, Gus was still active and playful. He had some health problems, but they were being managed. After watching that video, it's difficult to believe that Gus went into kidney failure and had to be euthanized just 5 weeks later. But after 5.5 days of treatment with enalapril, Gus had an acute onset of symptoms and lab parameter abnormalities that were consistent with severe kidney dysfunction. Dr. Church had told me that he would need to run a renal panel on Gus 1 week after starting treatment with enalapril to see if his kidney function was impacted, and apparently it was. I thought the best thing to do at that point was take Gus to see an internal medicine specialist. The very first visit with Dr. Ford on October 14th, I specifically asked her if Gus was in kidney failure, but she reassured me that he just had a GI bleed and was not in kidney failure. At the next appointment, less than 2 weeks later, on October 27th, I specifically asked Dr. Ford, "Is Gus dying?" To which she replied, "No, if he was, I would tell you." Then, just 6 days later, on November 2nd, Dr. Ford told me that Gus was in kidney failure and should be euthanized. I had contacted Dr. Ford 6 times in that 3-week period because Gus just kept getting worse and I was desperately trying to help him. By trusting Dr. Ford, an internal medicine specialist with over 30 years of experience, I thought I was doing what was best for Gus, but I was wrong. I didn't know much about kidney disease or kidney failure before Gus died, but after he died so quickly and unexpectedly, I was driven to research it and attempt to understand how this could have happened. I wish I knew then what I know now, because I would have made different decisions for Gus. I would have questioned Dr. Ford on her lack of any diagnosis and treatment related to kidney dysfunction. I would have sought out a second opinion when Gus did not show any improvement and instead only worsened. Based upon the information I gathered and my professional experience in clinical research, I strongly believe that Gus was suffering from acute kidney injury due to an adverse drug reaction with enalapril. Dr. Ford had 3 weeks to properly diagnose and treat Gus, possibly saving his life, but she completely missed the ongoing kidney issue until it was too late. Because of this, Gus suffered and had to be euthanized sooner than he should have been. I don't know how or why, but grave mistakes were made and corrective and preventive action should be taken. I know that nothing will bring Gus back or undo the past, but by filing this complaint, I hope that Dr. Ford will learn from this experience and not make the same mistakes again. Because if she continues to repeat the same mistakes, then other pets will suffer needlessly and die as Gus did. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Can you step back? And we have Dr. James, you're the lead on this one.
Yeah, so this is 2220, and this is a tough case because I don't think we still know exactly what might have happened here. I think we have some good theories, and I'm concerned as to why a further workup for the kidneys wasn't done. I can see where GI bleed would have come into play and where that would have been consideration, but I also feel like we kind of discarded another condition, saying it's a GI bleed and didn't really fully evaluate that. I have additional questions in this case, and at this point I would make a motion that we move it to an informal
second.
Motion on the floor and a second to move 2220 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, and we'll move this case to an informal. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Next up, we have 2223. Tracy, would you read this summary, please?
So he's from town, we have complained in Marcus, Korea. The respondent is Tara Lynn, Temple DVM. On June 14th, 2021, Artemis, a 7-year-old female Boston Terrier, was presented to respondent for evaluation of left rear leg lameness. The dog was examined under sedation and diagnosed with a ruptured left radial bruciate labral. Respondent discussed her writing through the complainant, and an estimate was provided for surgical repair. The dog was vaccinated and discharged. Complainant stated that the dog had a vaccine reaction. On July 16, 2021, the dog was presented to respond for surgery to repair the ruptured left cranial cruciate ligament. The dog was anesthetized and the right leg was prepped for surgery. Upon our arthrotomy of the right side of the respondent identified the right cruciate ligament was intact. The medical record was reviewed and it was confirmed that the ruptured cruciate ligament was on the left side. The surgical site on the right leg was closed and the dog was recovered. Respondent called the complaint and accepted full responsibility of what transpired. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the veterinary practice act have occurred, and it was moved and seconded to the board finding ARS 3220-31, gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles or practices for operating on the wrong leg. The motion was approved with a vote of 3-2, Dr. Rye and Mr. Mora opposed.
And we have the respondent. Would you care to address the board?
She does with counsel. Good morning. This case involves an unfortunate, unintentional.
State your name for the record, please.
Tara Lynn Temple.
And David Stoll, appearance, legal counsel for Dr. Temple. As I started to say, this case involves an unfortunate, unintentional human mistake. and does not lend itself to a lot of questions or an informal interview because Dr. Temple in the practice Animal Care Hospital of Phoenix has been completely candid and honest about what happened. The complainant's dog, Artemis, needed an ACL surgery, and the surgical technician mistakenly marked the wrong leg because she had misread an abbreviation in the medical record. Unfortunately, Dr. Temple did not catch this mistake until the dog was already on the table and the surgery had begun. The practice and Dr. Temple admitted the mistake, were forthright and honest with the owner, and fully refunded his money. Following the incident, Dr. Temple conducted a meeting with the hospital administrator, the associate veterinarian, and all staff to thoroughly review how this mistake happened and to implement changes to eliminate or minimize the chances of this mistake ever happening again. Specifically, all staff are no longer using abbreviations such as the one in this case that are not universally recognized. Second, there's a mandatory policy that all surgical plans and medical records are detailed, evaluated, and reviewed by all team members prior to a surgery. And finally, the practice has implemented a new confirm procedure and location checklist for all surgeries. As she indicated in her response, Dr. Temple, as the veterinarian, has accepted full responsibility for the technician's oversight and has clearly used this incident as a teaching moment to improve the manner in which the surgeries are done at the practice. As a result, we don't feel that a disciplinary order involving additional continuing education or a civil penalty is warranted. We suggest that the board either issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern or at most offer a consent agreement with a violation of R311-5011 for not utilizing professionally acceptable procedures to correctly identify the leg prior to surgery, and that associated with that, the appropriate sanction would be nothing more than a decree of censure. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me step back. We have the complainant. Would you care to address the board?
Yes, please.
Please state your name for the record.
Marcos Carrillo.
Thank you. And we have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you for going and doing this for me. There is one question I have, and that's primarily why I want to speak to you. There was a question on the last meeting regarding the estimate for the vaccines, because I stated that I did not recall giving permission for the vaccines. I was curious to know if the board had received that estimate, and if I could, if possible, verify the signature on it.
I didn't understand that. I didn't understand what the question was.
I didn't either. Could you please speak into the microphone?
Apologies. The last hearing, there was a question about the vaccines and an estimate for it regarding my permission to proceed with it. And I was curious to know if the board was given that estimate they had asked earlier to have Dr. Temple present to you. And I was curious to know if I could see it and verify my signature.
We have all the medical records.
The question is specifically around the vaccines that he doesn't feel he authorized. I see an estimate. No questions to be discussing this, but the estimate.
I'm sorry.
Under lateness evaluation has UVs 3 year and distemper parvo 3 year listed. It gives a low price and a high price. It was in the estimate for the lateness specifically. And there is a signature at the bottom, 6/14/21.
What page is that?
It's the one page that's called Lateness Exam Estimate. It's an itemized bill.
It's in its own folder.
Yeah. It's under new medical records.
So, I mean, it
was included in the estimate with the lameness exam. How much it was really discussed, I don't know what it was, and I don't know.
Anything else that you wanted to tell us?
Just that I appreciate the board, and that the only reason why I filed a complaint was to hopefully prevent this from happening again. I do appreciate Dr. Temple's forthright ownership of the situation, and I do recognize that she is absolutely remorseful. And I do hope that the changes that the practice she works at can prevent this from happening again.
Thank you, and you may step back. Dr. Thompson, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So as stated, this case is kind of a one that we may have all have been at some point. It is of human error. In this instance, the wrong leg was cut for a cruciate ligament surgery. In reading both sides of the information, you know, it is definitely something that is a human error, but at the end of the day, we as veterinarians are ultimately in charge of what happens under our care. So we do rely very heavily on technicians to get things ready for us and prepare our day. But I put myself in that position and how I would have approached surgeries myself. And it's, yes, this is, okay, what are we doing today? We're doing this on this leg. Like, and it is something that you check and double check. So I think in reviewing all of the evidence that we've seen, I do agree with the recommendation for the gross negligence. With that, I would state that it, again, the doctor has definitely showed remorse and thoughtful about what happened and takes full responsibility and has already tried to implement changes in the practice to ensure that doesn't happen again. And so my recommendation to the board is to offer a letter of concern and again address those issues. We have training of the staff, proper usage of terminology, checklist involved that they've already started, but also the doctor verifying that checklist, not just the technicians going through that and making sure things are done. It sounds, you know, per the complainant as well, that is his ultimate goal, is to ensure that this does not happen to another pet. And I think bringing this to the board and having the doctor review what's going on in her clinic and us review that and put that letter of concern out there to ensure that those are problems to prevent this from ever happening to another pet.
Let me clarify, are you recommending gross negligence and a letter of concern, or just the letter of concern?
Just the letter of concern.
So the motion for that would like it to be a dismissal, right? And then issue a letter of concern.
Yeah. Don't
I mean, this is a tough one because I do feel for this veterinarian. I can totally see how this happened. You're right. We've all probably been in situations where we've made mistakes. And I do think she's taken action on it. The question, though, is it still happened under her care. A dog still went under surgery and opened a joint for the wrong reason or leg. And I think we've struggled with this in the past before as a board, going back and forth on is there a violation or not, because it is a tough call. I guess in this case, I would be leaning more towards professionally acceptable procedures within ensuring that everybody knew the acronyms you were putting in the medical record, that they knew how to verify, that there were double checks in place, that those procedures, had they have been in place, this wouldn't have happened. Now they are in place, so I don't necessarily know that there needs to be any reprimand, but I feel like, I don't know, it happened, and it sucks that it happened on all accounts, but I don't know.
Yeah, negligence is it's a very hard word. We throw that around. I mean, people throw around malpractice and those kinds of things, but I think there has to be some intent and some looks behind that too. And to what happened before any kind of actual punitive action from a board or some kind of governing body, and it sounds like things were done there. I'm kind of leaning more towards also R311-501, the standards of practice, professionally acceptable procedures also. I think I can see the argument for letter of concern because it is something, again, mistakes happen. Mistakes are gonna happen in medicine. It's just, that's life, unfortunately. That's why we practice medicine. It's an art form, and things can go weird. We try and minimize those risks as much as possible, but yeah, I'm kind of leaning more towards the standards of practice also.
And I think if I remember just from past cases, it seems like when the policies are all in place, the preventative measures to prevent these things from happening are all in place, and somebody else didn't follow it, like a technician or something, sometimes we've then done a letter of concern because everything was in place, the doctor did everything, it was a mistake on somebody else's behalf. In this case, they weren't in place.
Yeah.
Like we now have those measures in place, but they weren't in place. And I think that's where I'm more leaning towards the procedures that would have prevented this were not there.
So I kind of take a very simple, here's my simplistic look at it. It's kind of like if you get caught speeding, you can get a warning and let you go. But once you wreck and hit something, you're not going to get a, you can't get a warning. You're going to get a ticket, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we're there with this.
Yeah.
The letter of concern would be the warning. This one, you got to get a ticket. Does it have to be a high ticket? No. But I think just because it happened, it's got to be a ticket. And I think, like I said, everything right. I mean, to correct it, everything was done right and professionally. Mm-hmm. And you know, kudos for that. We don't see that all the time. And communication, right? I mean, that's why we see half of our cases is because there's not good communication. So I mean, I commend that. And so I want to do the easier forgiving letter of concern, but the wreck happened.
Yeah.
And I can't change it.
So Mr. Chairman, would another option possibly be offering a consent agreement? Question of counsel.
Yes, that's available to the board.
That's gonna, I mean, I agree, because the decree of censure is can be done under the standard of practice, the 501,
yes. Or
311-501, so we don't have to worry about anything else there.
That's correct, and as was discussed, the decree of censure is just memorializing that the conduct constitutes unprofessional conduct. There's no additional requirements.
Is that still under 311-501, or is that a whole separate thing than finding a violation of?
No, that would be the discipline that you would impose.
Oh, okay.
For finding the violation.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay.
So if we make a motion to find a violation of R311-501 for professionally acceptable procedures related to ensuring that staff was aware of the acronyms, that there were checks and balances with regards to surgical procedures and that those things were in place, so that's our violation. And we vote on that. And then we do the degree of censure, or we do it?
You can do it all in one consent agreement, right?
Yeah,
discipline, you have to separate.
For the violation.
Yeah, I think what you could do is if you're comfortable, is to offer the professional a consent agreement, adopted as your findings of facts, those set out in the investigative report, finding the violation of 2232.12 as it relates to 501.1. And offer a decree of censure. And then maybe, if not signed, inviting for an informal interview.
Okay.
So he just laid it out. All you've got to say is so moved.
So moved. Yes. So moved.
Does everybody understand?
Yes.
At least, yes.
So yes.
Cool, okay. So I checked the new people. Just be sure.
He does me.
Not saying me.
Okay, so we have a motion.
No, I'll second that.
And we have a second. And for this, we need to do a roll call. Any further discussion?
Yeah,
that we need to go through in the consent agreement normally we have, if not signed within 30 days?
I said that. That was in your so moved.
Oh, that was in my so moved. Great. Glad I'm on top of it this morning.
All right. Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger? Is not here, actually. Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Rai is an aye. Motion carries.